Hi, my name is Marcus, and this is a companion podcast for the CG Jung Help Desk Meetup Group. I host live events on Zoom every 2 weeks about the concepts and ideas of the Swiss psychologist Carl Gustav Jung. Every event, I give a presentation about the Jungian concept, so have fun with this event's topic.
So we will start, and this will be a little bit of a rerun, because I've done this event a little bit over a year ago already, when the group was way smaller, but I wanted to do it again. For one reason, because I did not have a recording for a podcast, and for the other reason, because my opinions changed a little bit and the things I found in the movie became a little bit more. So with time, ideally, the understanding gets deeper and it can be applied to more places. So, and this is actually how I want to use the movie. I'm not saying it's a Jungian movie. I'm just saying it's a little bit of a weird coincidence that there are a lot of things in there that can be seen through a Jungian lens and that it can be used to really make good explanations and give examples what Jung meant with specific phenomena and experiences. And yeah, this is why I wanted to talk about the movie. And it's a pretty famous movie to see through a psychological lens. And for the beginning, I want to establish like three key concepts about Jung just to help to jumpstart a little bit the interpretation and analysis. So Jung had this idea that the psyche is an energetic system, so that there's energy being exchanged and moving and causing things. And he called that libido, which comes out of psychoanalysis. He was pretty close with Freud, and Freud coined this term, and Freud gave it a very sexual direction, and Jung saw it really as, okay, this is just a basic energy that is moving around things in the psyche. It does not say that this energy really exists. It's rather, he uses it as explanation, as a metaphor to explain certain behavior of the psyche. And for him, libido is neutral. And his explanation is even using it like money, because money can be anything, right? When you have money, you can buy a car, you can go on a vacation, you do work, you get money. So it can be exchanged for different things. And this means it can, on the one side, is pretty neutral, but like good, you can do good things with it or you can do bad things with it. And it's swirling around in the psyche, causing things. And a lot of those things are unconscious. So the most things happening that use up libido or use libido are in the unconscious part of our psyche. A little bit like the body, right? The body does a lot of things by itself without us consciously doing it, like breathing, digesting, pumping blood through the body. And the psyche is a little bit like that. What makes consciousness special, and especially human consciousness, is that we have libido to use it to do specific things. So when we exert willpower, we aim for something and we materialize something, a thought, an action, a creative product, for example, where libido is spent like money. And when we concentrate a lot and we work a lot, we feel also tired. This is a loss of libido. We cannot do so much anymore. And for him, there's this barrier between consciousness and the unconscious. And things in the unconscious, they have libido, they work and so on. But the question whether something traverses over in the conscious realm has to do with how much energy it has. So how much libido is there? He says there are a lot of things happening in the background that we don't notice, that we don't realize until the point where they start acting up. So like normally we don't notice our digestion, but when we have trouble there because we're ill or we have eaten really a lot, then we notice it. Then it crosses this barrier. We become way more aware of that. And he uses a French term for that because he also studied a little bit in Paris to learn about psychology. And it's called abaissement de niveau mental, which means there's a lowering of consciousness. This means things can easily or more easily get from the unconscious to consciousness. For example, when people do awareness training and meditate and start focusing on their body, that already gives them a different feeling of the body. They might notice that there are certain parts aching, right? Or that certain parts are feeling good, something that were below the threshold before. But when people, for example, are sleeping, they become very aware of the unconscious processes. Or when people get sick, ill, drunk, right, or deprived of sleep, they can start to hallucinate and to be more aware of certain thoughts. So for example, when you don't sleep for 3 days, you will basically will have hallucinations till your body stops functioning correctly. So the body really needs sleep. That's the first concept. The second concept has to do with perception. And perception is, for Jung, very subjective. This means we don't see the external world as it really is, but it rather is always tainted by subjective experience and subjective personality. It gets filtered through us, what we see, what we experience. So we are kind of limited by our consciousness. We're limited recognizing the things we can recognize. For example, when there's a foreign language to us, it's just weird noises or strange letters and we can't make it out. But if we get proficient in the language, then we can pick out this information. Before it was just a jumbled mess, and then it can become poem or like analysis on a movie in Jungian terms when we are proficient in the thing. So consciousness forms what we can see, what we cannot see. He also thought there's not so much a big difference between inner experience and outer experiences. Outer experiences from the outside world, those are, of course, very dominant, as, for example, the sun or somebody hitting one. This is something outside, but we also have inside experiences. Extreme one would be like a phobia or a trauma, but also dreams that come from the inside. And Jung treats those things pretty similarly because he says, what is real is what causes something. Your reaction on fear or hope or love, which comes from inside, has a reaction on you the same as it would happen outside. When you're afraid of a dog, then there does not need to be a dog around for you already to be afraid. And this means that Jung was very open for the psychic realm and said, okay, the psyche has a huge influence. And this is why he looked into it, because he saw there was a huge influence. And the same way how we can see things through consciousness, we are also able to be blind because of consciousness, because we do not focus on something and we cannot recognize something. There's always a limitation to that. Similar to the eye, we think the world around us is high definition, but we don't see this world in high definition. It's only a very small spot actually that can put in a lot of information. Everything around it is basically guessed, right? And if you stretch out your arm and look at your thumb, the size of your thumbnail, that is the part which you see with high accuracy and high resolution. And the rest is basically your brain stitching all the things together and just saying, yeah, everything looks very clear, very sharp. But actually, you only see a very small spot and the rest is like generated by AI, we would say today. The third concept is consciousness is blind and we have a complete psyche. So our psyche is in many parts smarter than we are, because our psyche is the human nature that has been with humans for millions of years. So it's been formed through evolutionary processes, through experiences, to be already ready for certain situations. So while consciousness and you as an individual person have to learn certain things, the body already knows a lot of things. It's more a rediscovery. And the development of consciousness is to become bigger and larger and to encompass more functions and experiences of the psyche. And the way how the psyche does this is by compensation. So when you run too far into one direction with your consciousness, there will be a counterbalance created in the unconscious to bring you back in this position. And Jung even talked about that when people have depression or neurosis, that this is a healing function. This is the psyche trying to heal itself, to push certain contents into consciousness so that consciousness pays attention to them, tries to incorporate them. And similar as fever is the reaction on a, for example, virus infection, it's not the fever is not the illness. The illness is the virus. And the same for him, neurosis or depression is not the illness. It's a reaction to something. It's for fever, the body trying to kill the virus or the bacteria with higher temperature. And in the case of neurosis and complexes, to force consciousness to pay attention to it, which is also a psychoanalytic term. This can cause, in an extreme case, a split in the psyche, as consciousness is so stiff and so unadapted that there has to be a big, big force trying to move it from its very sturdy position. So for people who have seen the movie, which I guess everybody of you already did, you might have picked up already some things I'm trying to get at in the later analysis. But just to bring everybody up to speed, if it's been a longer time since you have been seen the movie, and make a short summary. And I've written it down to keep it really, really short and on point, because I will mention some things that will be important. So, summary of Fight Club, the movie. The nameless narrator, which is called Jack, colloquially, can't sleep. He is severely depressed and discovers self-help groups that he doesn't share the problems with, but can find emotional release. This goes on until a woman joins that plays the same game, called Marla Singer. She pushes Jack back into his depression because he becomes aware that he is a fraud. At this moment, he makes acquaintance with Tyler Durden, a soap salesman. After Jack's apartment burns down, he moves in with Tyler and goes into a spiritual journey which makes him question society and its rules. Things spiral out of control when others join their journey, causing mayhem in the real world. Jack has his doubts, investigates Tyler, and comes to the realization that Tyler is himself and a split-off part of his psyche. When the group wants to demolish skyscrapers in the middle of the city, Jack confronts Tyler to the point that Jack shoots himself to stop Tyler. The movie ends with Jack holding hands with Marla, watching the buildings collapse. And that's Fight Club, a little bit over 2-hour movie. And this is also my disclaimer. I will mainly talk about the movie, but that because that's what most people are familiar with. I also read the book many years ago, but the movie does something very well, and it makes it even more tighter and clearer, the whole narrative and certain topics. It fleshes this out. So the movie is really an improvement over the book, and even the author, Chuck Palahniuk, said the same. So the book itself is based on a short story that Chuck wrote, which is still in the book. If you're interested and you're reading the book, there's a chapter about Fight Club explaining the rules. This is basically unchanged, the short story. And later, Chuck fleshed all this out to make a complete book. And this caught the attention of David Fincher, who wanted to make a movie out of it with Edward Norton and Brad Pitt. And he actually did. And the movie was released and it pretty much bombed. Nobody wanted to see it in the cinema. It was abysmal. So for the star power that was there, somehow people were not really interested. It was not later until the movie came out on DVD that it really found a cult following, especially with the soap bar, which are also used as a logo for the event, and the posters. It became a cult classic, spread, and now it's a very famous movie, and it's very high on the list of the most impressive, the best movies, IMDb. It's on a very, very high rating there, saying, okay, there is something to it. And this will always be the hook that I will use, because for every piece of art or creative work, if it speaks to a lot of people, that they spend a lot of time with it, thinking about it, and they're drawn to it, very likely it's archetypal, meaning that it's speaking to something inside of us that concerns our human nature and human experience, that it tingles our ancient parts in the psyche that find themselves in there and get activated. And for Jung, this is how archetypes work, these ancient patterns of behavior, which has formed through experiences of millions of years from countless lives, that when the situation is the same or similar, that the archetype gets activated. And the archetypes are full of libido. They move things around. So since this is a movie and nobody experienced the events of Fight Club ourselves, but rather we see a movie, a representation of that, it still spoke to us because it's still a valid experience and still speaks to things inside of us. So we have some very central figures in the movie, and one of them is Jack, who is unnamed in the movie, but is colloquially called Jack. And he is in a very special situation, except that he's depressed. And what seen through a Jungian lens, we would say about Jack is that he's severely trapped in his logos aspect of the psyche. So Jung saw really two big parts in the psyche, which is the logos function and the eros function, logos being the separating factor and eros being the combining factor. So if you go deep down enough in the psyche, there are those two functions happening because you're separating and you're combining. And being proficient means being able to do both and also knowing when to do what and to what degree, because there's a pathological conclusion to both of those. None is better than the others. Both have a good side, they have a bad side. Like, you should be able to separate, right? But if you cut down everything, everything is sterile and dead. And you should be able to combine. But if you combine everything, there's no individuality. and everything is mushed together and nothing really breathes because everything gets suffocated. And Jung says, while all human beings in their psyche have this logos function, the eros function, everybody has a favorite function, a little bit like handed and said, left-handed people and their right-handed people. But he noted in the context of his patients also was that men gravitate more to logos and women gravitate more to eros. And in that sense, Jack is very, very masculine. So he's completely disconnected. He's working in this insurance company where he's checking whether it's worth to pay out people or to recall cars when people died in them. He's completely removed from this moral or judgment function to say, okay, this is good or this is bad. He's just really drifting. And you see it in the performance of Edward Norton that he's absent and not feeling anything at all. Internally, he's dead. He's so disconnected or disassociated from everything that he's even a voice, a bodiless voice in the movie talking to the audience directly. And all the things he talks about are just disconnected stories or pieces of information that do not really fill a bigger narrative, but rather this is all the things like, oh yeah, here, by the way, is something interesting. Like when we have car accident, we check whether it's something that happens so often that we have to recall the car. Otherwise, it's okay. People can continue dying, stuff like that. So it's a very bleak outlook. It's a very negative outlook. And this matches not only his internal state, but also his external state. And this is what's very cool about stories, that you can really represent this. So he's not only internally disconnected and dead, but rather he is also in his outside job disconnected. He has the insurance job, but also what is he doing all the time? He's flying. He does not really have roots anywhere. He's flying to place, always meets new people, is always in a different hotel. And also, he's never really at home, really in his own home also, which is a small apartment up in the sky, also disconnected from the earth. So he's always way into the, let's say, spiritual abstract world, where Jung also sees the logos as a spiritual function, as an abstract function, a necessary function. But when people only stay there, they will suffer deeply for them because they're not only logos, they're also eros. The movie is about Jack discovering this eros function and that's being represented through different people in different situations. So everything about Jack is impersonal. He buys all the furniture and he buys it not even in person. He buys it over the phone out of the catalog. And everything is from the same company. And the tragedy that Jung saw for modern man and let's say rather modern people was this disconnection between the things they have and the things they can do. So Jung lived over 100 years ago, and he was also pretty rich, and he grew up in central Switzerland. He said, it's pretty bad that people live in apartments, especially when they're renters, because they cannot change the place really to their own psychology, and they're disconnected also to that. So when you have your own house, ideally even build it yourself, there's a complete different connection to it, but otherwise you're always a guest. This is his thoughts and his ideas. So Jack is disconnected. And when he goes to this self-help seminars and does meditation exercises, where does he go? He goes into an icy cave, which is also a bit like a cage where he's trapped inside. It's icy, it's cold, it's intellect. There's nothing else. There's no warmth, there's no feeling. So this is Jack, completely trapped in his logos, completely trapped in thinking and his life. And what the psyche does is, when the libido is not applied where it should be applied, stays in the unconscious and it builds something. It starts to accumulate. And the reason why he is depressed is because he does not have this libido that should be there, which is trapped in the unconscious. And he suffers for that to the point that he cannot even sleep, which is really interesting. So even his unconsciousness is denied to him. He has to be awake all the time. And the second part that makes it interesting is because he never sleeps, his barrier gets lower and lower because he's so trapped that nothing can come inside from the outside, that his psyche is lowering his mental barrier by basically not letting him sleep. and experience what's happening inside him more directly. So what is the journey of Jack? Jack's journey is to find the Eros. And Eros is the bodily, the connected, the earthly. And this is how Jack also approaches the world. So for the reaction that he cannot sleep, he goes to the doctor. And this is in the beginning of the movie. The doctor says like, okay, yeah, people have real problems. Just try to make some sports, do things like use your body, right? Do sports, use your body. And he says, oh, can't you just give me something? So give me something from also on the outside, some kind of shortcut, something abstract, like medicine, something very modern, let's say. So give me just some human tool to help me with my rather deeper problem that I have. And then he gets recommended for self-help groups. And he's immediately turned on by the self-help groups because it gives him emotional connection and also bodily connection. The hugging, the crying, the release, the things he does not have in his life. But it's very dishonest of him because he does not have the problems. He goes there for completely selfish reasons. And as soon as he has this little bit of release of bodily attention and experiencing pain also through others, this is when he can sleep. And this is when he can finally have release. And he has a little bit of balance back in his psyche. But his problem is he's dishonest. And another function of the psyche is that of guilty conscious. This means morality is also very deep-seated inside of us. You see that even in animals that have moral codes and they have a sense of fairness, even though they do not have to be taught. So it's again his psyche saying, no, no, you're doing it correct. This is not the way to do it. You have to be honest. In a synchronistic way, Marla Singer appears. And he automatically hates Marla because she's a manifestation of his shadow. She is a manifestation of the things that he does not want to confront about himself. This is really a great example for it because she does the exact same as him. But because he sees it in another person, this directs all his hate because this is actually the things that his own psyche tells him about himself, saying, you're doing it wrong. That's not the correct way to do it. You're a fraud. He projects and channels onto Marla because she's there and she's playing the same trick and game as he does. So this is then his psyche telling him again, Jack, you have to do something. The sleeplessness and now Marla. So before it's just a personal problem, his own psychological hiccup, and now it's manifesting even in an outside person. Marla, as a female, is a representation of Eros. And in that sense, also something bodily. And the things Jack does not want to confront. So he's unconsciously looking for this, and the psyche is pushing him to the bodily. But consciously, he's not able to do the step into the bodily direction. This is what I see about the movie as a central relationship, which starts at the beginning and revolves at the end, is Jack coming together with Marla and coming to terms with Marla and getting into a relationship with Marla. So this is a very interesting way to look at the movie. All the points where they have contact, interact with each other, it's up until the end, always a failing of Jack to establish a correct relationship with Marla and his Eros function represented by her. So Marla is weird. She dresses weirdly. She behaves weirdly. She lies. She steals. So she's very disagreeable. Jack is very cookie cutter. He's basically only using his intellect. He's very likely also honest in his job. And he does everything according to the book. But Marla is the exact opposite. And this is already an opposite that is happening in his psyche. Because when somebody tries to do something and be something very consciously, in the unconscious, this compensatory function reacts and creates a counterpole to that. To take both together than to have a whole human being, because it's like two charges. And when you are very positively charged, there's a negative charging in your unconscious happening. And they, of course, clash and trying to come together, but they also push each other away. Interesting point that was pointed out to me from my wife was when Jack goes into these icy caves in the one self-help group, it works until Marla comes. And suddenly Marla invades his psyche. Suddenly she's in the cave there. He meets a penguin and later it's her. And from a Jungian perspective, this is very interesting because Jung deals with symbols. The same as the apartment up in the sky is a symbol, the icy cave is a symbol representing something, a psychic state. The penguin also represents something. And Jung says when people encounter animals, for example, in their dreams, this is the manifestation of certain instincts. So he even says down to the animal, kind of animal, it's possible to see what kind of instinct likely it is and which part of the psyche or even the body. So when you have, for example, a snake, which is very closely associated with the earth, with hidden dark places, this is a very ancient part of the psyche and the sympathetic nervous system. Or when you have a bull, he says it's very often charged sexually. And with a penguin, this is the interesting part, it fits perfectly into Jack's situation because what Jung says, we have a kind of representation of the world already inside of us through our human nature and through the experiences that happened in the past to human beings. And he said, when you have an animal in a dream, the first thing that should be done is to check out what the natural habitat and the natural way of being of the animal is. Because he says, in the psyche, there's already these representations. So there's a reason why the psyche picked this animal and not the other animal. Why is it the snake and not a bull? Why is it the bird and not a lion? And for penguins, they have a very specific way for relationships. They bond for life. The partners stay together forever till the end. So this is the psyche of Jack telling him, this is what you're looking for, a situation like the penguin. And the psyche presents him, yeah, by the way, this is Marla. And then he says, oh no, this is horrible. I do not want that. I want her gone. The psyche telling him that she's the most fitting person for him, but his consciousness is still in the state that he's not able to accept her because consciousness changes, it evolves. It also needs to adapt. Jung saw a lot of fear about the unconscious and that people don't want to investigate their own consciousness. It has to do that they don't know how to deal with it. It's strange, it's foreign. It's a very complex situation that, of course, causes fear. Also, a little bit like a protective mechanism that the psyche says or consciousness says, okay, I don't know how to deal with it, so I get away from it. A little bit like the body reacts when you eat something which is not good for the body. So the body will tell you if it's not good for you immediately. For example, bitterness, a taste, is there to say, okay, this is poisonous, do not eat it. It's also something ingrained in our human nature. Based on a lot of experience, a lot of human beings and even animals likely died because of this, just to gain this function. So the body will try to get rid of certain things. We will throw up, for example, when we drink too much or eat bad food. So the same mechanism also exists in the psyche and consciousness to say, okay, there's something that's, I cannot handle it yet. It's too much for me. It's overloading my capacities and my skills. So, but this is basically the fate for Jack, because this is also what Jung said. Women are the fate for men, and the other way around also, that men are the fate for women, because those are the ambassadors of the other side. It's good to have an ambassador, not to be confronted directly with the other strange side when your logos experiencing errors, but rather to have somebody who speaks the language, who is fluent in this area, to make oneself familiar with it. So represented as Marla. And he always tries to get to this point, even when his apartment burns down. The very first person he calls is Marla, and she picks up, but again, he cannot deal with it, and he hangs up again. There's already things in his psyche pushing him to these actions and these conclusions, but he's still not willing to go in this direction. And this is what the psyche does. The psyche pushes us by giving us certain ideas, certain visions, certain dreams, and certain interests. To say, okay, this is where your journey lies. This is where you should develop to, especially for curiosity. Jung even saw it in alchemy, where Mercurius, the Greek god and messenger of the gods, played a central role because it was Mercurius teaching the alchemist things through curiosity. So there's something in your psyche, and there's 10 million things in the world, but you are interested in very specific things. And these things are personal because they speak to you. They tell you something about you. And this curiosity is there to bring in more information, to spend more time with it. Because what consciousness does is unpacking, differentiating, elaborating, making things more sophisticated by spending time with it consciously. So Jung also says about this, the things you hate, because there are 10 million things in the world to hate. There's a pretty specific reason why you hate things. And the main emotion associated with the shadow is hate for Jung. And he says, okay, the things you hate and you do not like, there's a very high chance there's something inside you speaking to it, but the things you don't want to think about it, you don't want to associate with yourself. And because Jack cannot really deal with Marla and he gets away from her more and more, there's the next trick from the psyche. And this is Tyler Durden. And Tyler is also a representation of the psyche as the other, the counterbalance. All the parts which should be in Jack's consciousness and in his life and in his experience that he does not integrate it yet or he does not want to deal with. So Tyler is a second personality. And Jung says this can be the natural evolution of a psychological problem. Something happens that you don't know how to deal with. The first is the complex. It's a little bit nagging in the background and it can cause you to misspeak, which is a Freudian slip, or to have an accident or something like that, but it can become worse. It can become a neurosis that people become depressed and cannot work anymore because there's unresolved things in their psyche. When people still don't deal with it, the psyche will push harder and harder to get the attention. Jung says that goes to the point where the psyche can break apart, for example, in schizophrenia. This was his explanation for that, having unconscious contents which are so autonomous and so strong that they overwhelm consciousness, break it apart, and the person cannot function anymore. But like a lower version of that is to have a second personality, like a second being. When there's enough material in the unconscious that should be in consciousness, there's being a human personality being assembled. And this can be encountered, for example, in dreams or also in life projected on other human beings. So what is Tyler's relationship to Marla? Because Tyler and Marla, interestingly enough, are very, very similar. Marla is a representation of the anima, also part of the shadow. It's murky because of things can overlap. But Tyler is also, and this is my interpretation, and I found a quote from Jung that gives a foundation to that. He says he encountered patients who had so big problems with their feminine relationship side that their anima basically had to be male to be able to interact with. So I see Tyler really as a male representation of anima. And this is to make a stepping stone to Jack evolving and exploring his Eros function. It's a little bit like medicine that you have to coat in sugar so that you can get it down. Because if you taste it immediately, you spit it out again. But if you coat it, then you can pass the first barrier and then can be in the body and then it can act as things. And the same for the psyche. So the maleness of Tyler is to smuggle in the Eros function and the bodily things into the psyche of Jack. He becomes the stepping stone, and the consciousness to evolve needs these stepping stones. The challenge needs always to be enough to be actually be able to be fulfilled. Marla and Tyler are almost identical. Both are pretty much outcasts of society. Both don't have regular jobs. Both lie. Both steal. Both are very extroverted and flamboyant and wear outrageous things and behave outrageously. But Tyler has a big advantage. Tyler is a male and Tyler is not real. Like Marla is bodily. Marla is real. But Tyler is just a figment of the imagination of Jack. And that makes it easier for him because he is rather in the not so real abstract things and interacting with them. So it's a perfect stepping stone for Jack. Everything that Jack does not like about Marla, that she's lying, that she's so aggressive, that she's doing only what she wants, he likes in Tyler. And this is to show a little bit again about the libido function, about this, that it's neutral. Libido itself is neutral, but it can express in different ways. It can show in love or in hate, but both are charged. You have love, hate, and neutral, and the neutral things you don't think about, so you only experience the other things because they are charged with libido. So it's easy for him to love the things in Tyler that he hates in Marla because for these things, he has a lot of libido involved because they are missing. Those are the things trapped in his unconscious. So Tyler, in the whole movie, brings in bodily things for Jack, who's still in his apartment way up in the sky, flying always, and he has to get down. He has to come into contact with that. And how does Tyler do that? He burns the apartment of Jack. We find that out in the movie, that the reason why Jack's apartment burned down is because Tyler set it to flames. And the very interesting part about Jungian symbolism is that libido is represented as fire. So it is energy, it is fire, and Tyler brings it into the world of Jack by burning down these impersonal things he should get away from. He needs to get out of that apartment. He needs to get out of the sky. What Tyler does, he takes Jack below Earth to Fight Club, because Fight Club is in the cellar of Lou's restaurant, or Lou's diner, was it called. So he brings it under the Earth, from up in the air, under the Earth, to experience the bodily by feeling pain and also acting with the body, actually doing things. And his whole modus operandi is bringing bodily things into the world. This is why he splices genitalia in kids' movies, to have this innocence, but it's disrupted by something which is also part of human experience and should also be taken into account. Like, this is in the fairy tale Sleeping Beauty. Beauty falls asleep because for her birthday, the evil queen was not invited. The evil queen is also part of the kingdom. It's also part of the experience. But the parents said, like, oh no, we want to protect our child from evilness, so we will just not invite her. So what happens? She falls asleep. She's not a complete human being. She's completely trapped in the unconscious. She cannot evolve. She's not living a real life because evil is not there. The missing part is not there. And it's the same thing for Jack. He's repressed. He can't do anything. He's withering away because the bodily is missing in his life. And what Tyler does is bring this into the society at large, not only specific to Jack, but also society at large. Like, he pisses into soup in restaurants and fancy restaurants to bring them down again from, okay, you're the elites up here, but here have this. And he does blue collar working jobs. And he's primal, he's archaic, he is the unconscious forces coming from the collective part, reminding Jack that he's a complete human being. And this is why he's so interesting and so unhinged, because he is this ancient energy. And this is, again, symbolized also through the clothes and the things he's wearing. What is Tyler wearing? He's wearing leather clothes. He has a leather jacket, his leather shoes. And his clothes are colorful, and they're also kind of revealing. Jack's clothes, they're black and white. They're monochrome. He's always completely dressed. So there you see already this opposite dynamics. And these opposites, they attract. The reason why Jack is so attracted, because Tyler is the opposite of him. This is the psyche saying, curiosity, spend time with Tyler, try to get acquainted, absorb his ideas. And Tyler acts as an internal guide. And this is what the psyche does, because the psyche is way more experienced than we are for the ancient things. You still need your consciousness, you need you to be working in the modern world. But even the modern world still consists of a lot of things that always existed. Like, people have relationships, friendships, family, interests, problems, dangerous situations. And the psyche deep down is prepared for all of these things. Your body right now has a protocol what to do when it's getting too cold. It will start losing your fingers and toes first, and then your limbs. It will try to protect your body through these things. Your body is already prepared to do a lot of things that you will likely never encounter, but have been encountered before. So the psyche can be an internal guide. And this guide is represented in Jungian sense through the self, a little bit like a guardian angel guiding light to say, this is where you should evolve to. This is a path to a higher consciousness, not an easy path, because consciousness needs to die and be reborn. And we see this in this movie very strong, but it could always hints. And this is why the things that Tyler says are deep and meaningful, because they're coming from a place where the deep and meaningful things are coming from. And what he does with Jack is an extreme separation from his existing surroundings, away from his self-help groups, away from the apartment, up to the point away from his job, to remove him from that completely. Because this is what individuation is. Individuation is stepping oneself from the things that are not oneself. And these can be outside forces or inside forces. Like when parents tell to a child how the child has to live its life and so on, it's completely directed by the outside. Like the child needs to separate from that. And children do that automatically. When they become adolescents, they rebel, they do things in secret, they hide away and do ideally a lot of crazy things as a way to separate from the family unit and to separate their psyche from the family psyche. And Tyler does that. And Jung says one step in this individuation process to become an individual and a separate, complete self is secrets and clubs, secret cults. He talks about that multiple times, that people look out for these things because it's already a way to separate and to individuate. And this is the direction where Tyler is steering Jack into these fight clubs, in these secret clubs you're not supposed to tell about, because this already separates one from the rest of the world. So the circle where one is involved gets way, way smaller, and people can become more aware of their individuality. This eternal guide function of the unconscious, which is represented through Tyler, Jung describes as mana personality. Jung uses a lot of terms that he encountered, and in earlier civilizational tribes, this was described as mana. When somebody is fascinating, we would say charisma. They have a lot of mana on their mana personality, so people are immediately drawn to them. And this is what Tyler is like. Everybody wants to be close to Tyler. They want to experience Tyler. And we know this in real life. There are a lot of charismatic people just immediately catch the attention. And for Jung, one part of this mana, of this charisma, is to have a higher consciousness, be further along the journey. And people feel it unconsciously, that there is something that the other person knows and can do that they also should know. So they spend time. This is, again, curiosity, right? Attention. So, but all in all, of course, Tyler is a troublemaker. And he is a representation of the problems that Jack has. So in the movie, we find out that Jack's father left him pretty early. A missing father can be a fast way to a father complex. What Jung talks about, it can be either when a parent is missing too much or is overbearing, this can cause a complex. So there's a part of the psychology of the parent in the psyche of the child, but still having influence and causing these things. So it's not a coincidence that Tyler is against society and against authority, because deep down, it's the same for Jack, because he has a father complex, because the father has been missing in his life, right? So Jack is trapped in logos as a male, but his father would also have been a sophisticated ambassador for the logos function to explain these things to him. Like Jack focuses only on logos, but there's more to it. He's missing the male part in his life, which showing him like, okay, what a complete male should look like. So what happens, of course, I heard a quote many times before that I think it's fitting, which is, the child that isn't embraced by the village will burn it down to feel its warmth. And this is what Tyler and what Jack does. He's so angry at the world that he wants to burn it down. And it happens very slowly over the movie, but the carnage spreads. Even it's called Project Mayhem, and it's just senseless destruction. So it's justified through some ideology, some aesthetics, but all in all, it's just causing trouble and annoyances for everybody around them. It's like pranks that little boys actually play, but now on a big and larger scale. So Jack's journey through the movie is a journey of individuation. Starts as the eternal child only consuming. This is what he does. He only consumes. He consumes furniture. He consumes information, tidbits, and he does not really create anything. There's not creative function in his life, because when people create, it comes out of the unconscious, especially the collective part. And this is where art is created and culture is created. But for him, it's all dead. And unconscious telling him his journey and that he has to come down already very early in the movie, because he has a vision in the plane. What does he envision? Plane crash, that the plane has to go down suddenly. This is already as unconscious telling him, hey, you have to come down. So in a dream setting, this would be a completely valid interpretation of why Jack would have this dream in a Jungian sense, to say to him, you have to come down. You have to come down from a very high place. So he's having this interest. He's being steered, for example, to the self-help groups and then to get rid of Marla and then to meet Tyler and to be in the fight clubs and to evolve in the fight clubs. And this is unconscious steering him into certain directions to spend time with it and to become more aware of these other ways of being and experiencing. And it's this conscious in the background always telling him, you're doing it wrong, doing it wrong. As I said before, it's all these steps where he does the wrong decision and then the psyche comes up with another trick just to get him to this place where he should evolve. And an important part of individuation that Jung stresses and many people are not really aware about, you become an individual, you become a whole person, but you don't do it alone. You cannot sit alone at home and individuate. It is really, you have to interact with other people because very likely the things you do not see in yourself and you do not want to contend with yourself are projected onto the outside world. You don't know yet that they're part of you, but through interaction with these persons that speak to you through love or hate, you will find out things about yourself. And that's already a path to individuation. Also, to have these ambassadors that can already do certain things that have a higher consciousness or come from a different function and all these things, building a relationship with them is a form of integration. So getting friends, having a partner, this is developing and becoming more accustomed with these functions that are still in the unconscious, but they should be in the consciousness. And you can see this through behavior and clothes. So Jack becomes through the movie more and more like Tyler. He also starts to smoke. Like Marla and Tyler, of course they smoke because they're basically the same. But Jack, through the movie, also starts to smoke. And he also starts to not take care of his outward appearance and also starts wearing different clothes. So he, in his thinking, his talking, becomes more like Tyler. But there's an effect that Jung also noticed with his patients that have been depressed before. Because the depressed state is no libido, no energy. And once this breaks up, you suddenly have all this burst of energy that has been missing. And it goes into the consciousness, or basically also overwhelming the person. So he said that's the point where a lot of people, when they come out of depression, become egomaniacal assholes, let's say, because they're full of energy, they're completely driven, and they're now 100% confident in the things they do. He saw that, for example, in Nietzsche, being overwhelmed with unconscious collective forces, being provided with incredibly amounts of energy. But of course, that makes him also egoistical, maniacal, sense of grandeur. Things that Jack went through, like he, no energy, maximum energy, and he becomes an asshole because he starts acting like Tyler, who is abrasive and aggressive and very extroverted, confident. So in Jung's sense, this is also an expected development in Jack. Through Tyler, Jack encounters a bodily, especially through fighting, through pain. And pain is a central thing in Fight Club. And it happens again and again that Jack runs away from pain. In the beginning, emotional pain, and then, of course, bodily pain. There's this one scene where a lot of things happen, where Tyler burns the hand of Jack. And it's an incredibly good scene because so many things are happening there. Tyler burns, of course, Jack, and he disfigures him through some acid. And what is the thing that Jack wants to do in this situation? He wants to meditate. He wants to go in his icy cave. He wants to separate his mind from the body and just go away from the pain. And Tyler slaps him in the face and, no, you have to stay here. You have to stay here. This is important. Experience the pain. Live through the pain. Live with the pain. And this is what the Jack did not do before. And this is what Tyler tries to teach as eternal guide to Jack again and again. Let go. Let pain happen. Encounter pain voluntarily. Do not run away. And this is what helps Jack to develop. Interestingly enough, also in the movie, through the relationships, and something also that we could anticipate in a Jungian sense, is this regression into childhood for Jack again. He meets Tyler. They move in together. Now, by the way, the house is a complete opposite of Jack's apartment, which is very neat. Everything is from IKEA. Everything is clean. There's only condiments, but not real food. And then they go to this house, which is a complete house, not an apartment. And it's basically living because it's full of animals. There's a lot of water in the all the woodwork. So it's expanding and contracting all the time. It's a living house and it's dirty. And Jack loves it because it's what he needs. This is where it's interesting. And that's so, so crazy good. You have the cellar, which is under the earth, and the cellar is flooded with water. And water is a representation of the unconscious because things can disappear in the water and suddenly appear, same as you have the surface of the water. But yeah, I got a little bit sidetracked. So he's regressing back into his childhood and even says that because Marla creates a relationship with Tyler and he does not like it because he does not like Marla and he wants to have a Tyler for himself. And he even says like, oh, I'm 6 years old again and I have to pass messages between my parents. And the moment where Tyler leaves Jack is a little bit like it's represented in movies when a father leaves their child. Late at night, the child is sleeping, Jack is sleeping, says some things, and John moves out, even with a briefcase in his hand, to show like, okay, this is his father leaving him again. So, and this leads, of course, to the realization of Jack that Tyler is a split-off part of his psyche, which is this perfect example for the blindness of consciousness. So, oh, I cannot see it in myself, and I see it outside, and I believe it's real. Nobody sees Tyler. Only Jack sees Tyler. But because he cannot see these parts inside himself, they're separated by him. And Tyler becomes a vision. He has this realization that actually he is Tyler Durden and confronts Tyler through again fighting, which he loses. And he's being strapped on a chair. And this is also a very important scene because for Jack, it's before always knowledge. He knows certain things, but he does not embody them. He fights Tyler, but actually fights himself. And you see it on the video camera. So this is so absurd. He's fighting with himself and destroys himself bodily by throwing himself off the stairs. But there's not really necessity because there's not someone there. He treats still Tyler as real, even though that he knows in his mind that Tyler is a figment of his imagination. But he does not embody it yet. He does not live it out. So when he's sitting there and really applies his mind and thinks about the situation, he realizes that Tyler has not the gun, but that he has the gun. So this is when his vision shifts and he sees the gun in his hand. This is already his consciousness evolving to integrate these things and really see this, because this is a crazy thing. When your consciousness is not prepared for it, you do not see the things that are right in front of you. And this is a crazy realization with psychology, especially with analytical psychology or psychoanalysis. And there, Jack does something very important in the part of individuation, because individuation is not something nice. You talk with others and then you individuate, but individuation is a very painful process. And Jack does something incredibly important, which is a sacrifice. And he sacrifices the most important thing, basically himself. He encounters pain and he inflicts pain on himself voluntarily. What he did not do the whole movie and likely his whole life by taking the gun, putting it in the mouth and pulling the trigger. And here on a Jungian sense, we can again find very interesting things. When you have dreams and you write down what you see in your dream, there are certain symbols that can be interpreted already in a certain way. Jung did not like dream books, but he talked about regularities, how to interpret things. And a weapon, especially, is a symbolization and manifestation of will, because it's human-made and it can be applied to do a certain task. So it's a perfect example and symbolization of will. And the gun is really Jack applies the will to himself and he's willing to sacrifice himself to stop Tyler, because he says, okay, this should not continue. Tyler needs to be stopped. And this is where he really does this leap of faith, where he's willing to transcend himself. And Jung has a quote for that. And I always have to think about it when I see this scene. And this is, you can only sacrifice what you truly have. So by sacrificing himself or being willing to sacrifice, Jack shows that he is having himself, right? That he has control over himself. So what happens at this exact moment? Tyler disappears. And when Tyler is gone, who appears? It's Marla. And this is why the very last shot of the movie, the very last thing that people see is Jack and Marla holding hands and watching the buildings collapse. because this is the unification of Jack and Marla. He's finally in the stage that he can deal with Marla and he wants to be together with Marla. He incorporated his old Jack-dom, like he was before, the new Tyler, which was the opposite. And these both extremes got combined in a new thing. And this is the new Jack. And the new Jack is able to have a relationship with Marla. So this is when he really completed this step and is now a more complete human being and ready for the next things. And this is what the story is about, to really get him to Marla and being able to incorporate also the Eros side, the bodily function, into his psyche. And I have a very interesting side note, something that I noted after our last event, because I talked about the East and the West. There are a lot of Eastern things also happening there. Like you have the yin and yang table, which burns down, and you see then on the street, and you have Tyler doing kung fu moves, and a meditation plays a part, but of course, Jack does it incorrectly. So those who joined the meeting last time, or maybe listened to the podcast, Jung's understanding that Westerners cannot deal with Eastern symbology and Eastern techniques, really. That's why they should not do it. And something just interesting that pointed out. So the last thing I want to talk about is society and the collective in large, because it is not only about Jack, Marla, and Tyler. There are also the other members of Fight Club and the members of Project Mayhem. And Tyler, in a sense, is a collective shadow in the collective unconscious of society. This is why people are drawn to them and why people are joining and listening to him, because Tyler is a missing thing in the psyche of a lot of people. And Jung talks also about this, how the neurosis and the problem of the individual is also represented in society. So if enough people have a neurosis, right, it also is reflected in the society. And if it's the society is neurotic, of course, the individual has also these collective problems. This is why it spreads so quickly. We have one manifestation, the unconscious content, the creative product of Jack's psyche. And as soon as it's out there in the world, of course, lived out by Jack, it catches like wildfire and gets a lot of people and gets the thing rolling. And this is what Jung warned about modern society, that we have material security, but our problem of the time are mass psychosis and mass psychological problems. And his case in point was Second World War, Nazi Germany, National Socialism, also communism, all the isms. To say there are certain ideas that suddenly grip a huge amount of people. And today, people are incredibly, even 100 years ago, incredibly powerful to cause tremendous destruction. And this is really an unconscious force, an archetype coming out, taking over people and causing havoc in society to a very, very large degree. So this is collective group problem that's encountered in Fight Club, that is not only Jack's problem, but it's like, no, this is deeper. This affects everyone in this society. And that makes it even more dangerous. And this is also the original end of the book, because the book does not end at that point where they're holding hands. This is a Hollywood ending. The book ending is Jack in a mental institution, and he's trapped there. And basically someone from outside who's working there at the staff is telling, okay, yeah, Mr. Durden, we have everything under control. So it's a horrific ending because Project Mayhem does not end and Jack can't do anything about it because he's trapped in a mental asylum. So what Jung saw as this equivalent to unconscious forces ripping people, he saw that in Nazi Germany and he saw that with the Germanic god of Wotan. And he saw a lot of representations for that. He even saw it in the dreams of German people before Nazi Germany came up because he's been practicing all this time and he saw, okay, already before, there's all these very weird dreams in all the things that weird experiences Germans have in their sleep. So he already saw deep into the psyche before. He saw there was something brewing. And for him, it was really the Wotan or the like archetype manifested as Wotan, representative as Wotan, causing havoc in this specific group and causing these very horrible, atrocious things. So Fight Club, in that sense, is very similar to the development of the Weimar Republic. And this is where I see it, where you start with romanticism and it devolves in this complete loss of civilization and barbarism and archaic energies that come from below And this was conclude my now pretty long presentation. So thank you very much for your attention. And I went a little bit overboard. So thanks for listening. And I hope you learned something and found maybe new aspects and facets in the movie, and also got some key concepts of Jung, because it's full of concepts of Jung. And I really like to do this now, to say, okay, these are examples, because the best way to explain something is through examples. And there's some really, really good examples in the movie. So thank you.
This was this event's topic. Thanks for tuning in. During an event, a discussion part follows after the presentation, where all attendees discuss the just presented topic or other Jungian concepts. If you also want to join, find the group on meetup.com. The name of the group is CG Jung Helpdesk. Also, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on the platform of your choice. See you next time.